Welcome to The Prep Room, the official podcast of NBE Wizard. Focused, strategic, NBE ready. I'm Cody Walker, funeral director, embalmer, educator, and I'm here to help you cut through the noise and prepare to get NBE ready. Let's do it. Welcome to the newest and next episode of The Prep Room. Welcome to The Prep Room, and I also want to welcome to The Prep Room our next guest that I'm very excited to have, Ms. Janet McGee. Welcome, Janet.
Cody, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Janet and I met, I think it was summer before last. We were working, I think that's right.
Last summer.
We were working with the American Board of Funeral Service Education. We were on a committee to review and revise a curriculum. And I think we were working on funeral service law.
Yes.
Outline. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. So tell us about yourself. Where are you from? How'd you get into funeral service? Tell us about you.
Sure. So, as you said, I'm Janet McGee. I live in Minnesota and I work at the University of Minnesota's Mortuary Science Program. I'm one of the instructors there. I primarily teach business classes, rules and regulations, capstone, clinicals, that type of thing, marketing, accounting. I got into funeral service mainly because I wanted to do a lot of different things. I wanted to do, you know, science, and I wanted to do accounting, and I wanted to do business. And I just felt like I wanted to do so many different things. And I remember my mom one night when we were folding laundry, she's like, "You should be an undertaker." And I was like, "Ew, I'm not going to be an undertaker, mom. That's gross." from the mouth of a 17 year old. And then, I looked into it more, and that was just when the internet was starting to become a thing. That's showing my age.
I'm right there with you.
Yep. And learning more about it, I was like, wow, this job actually feels really, really good inside, like for me, because it combines science, it combines business and accounting, it combines religion, it combines, you know, psychology, grief therapy, all those things. Cosmetology, just a lot of my interests pulled together and really working with people. And so, I decided to pursue it and it's been great. I worked full-time in the field for 6 years and then I got completely burnt out. And so I left, changed careers, got my MBA, went and worked at a bank for, you know, about 10 years. And did that. So I was out of funeral service for quite a while, but then, my family experienced a tragedy when, my almost 2-year-old son died from a dresser that fell on him in his bedroom. And that was in 2016. So at that point I had been out of funeral service, and I had let my license lapse and everything. But I basically left my corporate job behind so I could do advocacy surrounding furniture tip overs, because we learned very quickly this wasn't the freak accident we thought it was. It was actually, there's statistics behind this that, you know, over 500 people had died this way from the year 2000 and on. And so, I left my job and started doing some advocacy work, found other parents who this had happened to. We formed a parent coalition called Parents Against Tip Overs, which is a national nonprofit. And ended up working hard to pass the Sturdy Act, which is national legislation that now passed in 2022, but it became effective 2023. Furniture manufacturers across the country have to adhere to a newer, stronger safety standard. So stability is now better built into furniture design. Because we saw a lot of flaws when we were working with the furniture manufacturers, as far as, you know, what materials were being used and what was being acceptable as far as getting out on the market and putting it in children's home, you know, our family's homes and our children's bedrooms. So that's kind of a long answer.
But no, that was
that's
great.
A little bit about me and where I came from. And then after we got Sturdy passed, I had this opportunity to start teaching at the U of M in mortuary science. And, you know, at this point, being a bereaved mother and having gone through all this and working with other bereaved parents through Parents Against Tip Overs and you know, it just really felt right. And I'm so grateful to be here at the U and to be working with others in this field again.
Yes, I'm with you. Remind me your son's name.
His name is Ted.
Ted, I'm again so sorry for that loss. I know we've talked about that before. I think it's amazing all the work you've done with the legislation and everything you continue to do with that. It's amazing. Now, teaching, first of all, what was your mom's response when you actually pursued her suggestion to be an undertaker?
Oh, she was very happy because she was a social worker.
Okay.
And so she, and I was a CNA in high school. So at that point, you know, I had helped the elderly in my high school years working. And when somebody died, we had to prepare them for the mortician to come and stuff. So like she loved the funeral director in our hometown. She's like the funeral lady in the hometown. She's not with us anymore, but that was,
sure.
yeah. So she's very happy.
So where did you go to school?
Which I went school? To the University of Minnesota, graduated there in 2002.
As a Texan, I love the way you say Minnesota. I can't say it that way.
I don't even notice it.
You can probably notice me when I say Minnesota, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Graduated in 2002, and then you took the National Board Exam at some point.
I did take the board exam. I don't remember all the details of the board exam, but I do remember that I took it right away, like after I graduated, because they said take it while it's still fresh.
Yes. Was that important? Is that an important?
That's very important.
Yeah. And why is that so important?
Well, I can even say now as I teach our capstone course, which is, you know, as we help prepare the students for the capstone or for the National Board Exam, you know, there's so much content, and especially in, for us in Minnesota, we have, you know, we are one license, so they have to know everything. They need to take both tests. For us, it's part of their graduation requirement that they take that exam before they graduate. They don't necessarily need to pass. Of course, we want them to,
of course.
but we do require that they take it within 45 days of their final, you know, coursework, because there's so much content and they put in so much effort with this capstone course to prepare for it. We're doing practice quizzes. We're doing lots of review. And the whole idea is, you know, every week that goes by, we're going to lose a little bit of that information. And so studies have shown, or I guess data shows, I don't know that studies have been done, but data shows that the sooner that the students take it, they have a greater likelihood of passing. So we always recommend to the students to take it as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And that's something listeners have heard me say over and over on here. So I'm glad to hear you. We did not talk about that before the episode, but I knew you'd back me up on that. Yes. Data does show the longer you wait after you finish school, your chances go down of being successful the first time. So it's very important to take it as soon as you can. For sure.
It is. And here's the other thing too, that students might not realize, but I don't want to say you have to teach kind of two ways, but we have to help you understand the textbook of how things are done, right? To pass your NBEs. But then there's also so much you learn in school, and that you're going to learn beyond school about kind of real world applications and all those little variables that differ from state to state. And although it can be a lot, it can be really confusing. Yeah. And that's another reason I highly recommend taking that NBE right when you're fresh out of school, because you haven't been exposed to all the other funeral directors out there that are doing it a certain way that may or may not be aligned with what the NBE is asking. And then pretty soon you, I don't want to say develop bad habits, but you develop your own way of doing things. That of course is still within legal compliance, but if you go back, it could cost you questions on the NBE, I guess is what I'm saying. If you start kind of soaking up what other people in the field are doing versus focusing on the content of what you were taught in school.
That's exactly right. And for those who are already working in a funeral home or in a funeral related business, you've got to remember that just because your funeral home has always done it that way doesn't mean that that's the way the questions can be asked on the exam. Do you find students that are already working in the industry that can be difficult sometimes?
I've heard that feedback from students who grew up in the funeral home setting, mm-hmm. and it was part of their family. It can sometimes be a challenge for them to pass the NBE for that exact reason, because what is so cellular memory for them isn't what the NBE is, guidelines are.
Yes. Now, on the inverse of that, I've had students that have come to me before and say, especially toward the beginning of school, they say, can I really be successful here? I've never worked in a funeral home. I don't know anything about it. And my answer has always been, I want to see what yours is. My answer has always been, yes, absolutely you can. I don't necessarily think that it's always an advantage to go into it with those preconceived notions like you were talking about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't come from a funeral home family at all.
I don't either.
But I think that there's so much that has also changed, within the industry. And I would even say, I'll put this just in my perspective for teaching, management styles, for example. The way you manage employees today is very different than the way you manage them even in the 90s. And so, yeah. And that's just one example, but there's so many other examples of how things have kind of evolved and changed a little bit over time. And so that's why sticking to the content of what's in the NBE and all those study guides that we use is just so important.
Yeah, management style has definitely changed. That's a good example. Now, it may not have changed in all the funeral homes out there, but it has changed
it as has far not. As academic.
It's very true. But it has changed as far as the academic side, and we need to know those changes. And just like, yep. Arrangement conference, we read in our books about how the most effective method, but that doesn't mean that's the way that's being done in all the funeral homes around the country. It's just
right.
One example. So what do you remember about preparing for the MBE or your experience? Did you take both sections in one day? Do you remember?
I took them in separate days, I believe, but I think they were pretty close together. And I do remember, and I advise this to my students too, don't be afraid to drive an hour or somewhere to take it sooner.
Yes.
Because you might enter it in and be like, I'm going to take it in my city, but the only opening is in 2 months. It is worth it, I promise you, to drive 2 hours or an hour, whatever it is. Go a little bit outside your radius solely so you can take it sooner, because that could make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely, it could. And do you recommend students take it all, or graduates take it all in one day, 2 days, or does it depend on the candidate?
It probably depends on the student. I have had students that have taken both of them in one day and they've passed and they've felt great mm-hmm. about it. I would say a majority of my students have decided to take them within a week apart, maybe 2 weeks apart, but usually it's within those 1 to 2 week windows. And that's what I would advise, is trying to get them within a week or two of each other, because I think it can be a lot to study if you try to do it all in one day. So I'm not saying it's not possible,
but
I think that it's just good for your brain mentally to have a little bit of a breather. So I recommend, a week or two.
Yeah. And like you were talking about driving, if, it's not available in your town for, 2, 3, 4 weeks, you can set that second one for your town and then drive for the first one, something like that.
Yes.
If you need to, for sure. Yep. And how do you see, what are some of the ways you see students preparing for the national board that you've seen successful?
I always tell the students, I learned this from Dr. LeBrant, he's our program director at the U of M, but this is not something you can cram for.
That's
so
right.
This is not something that you can put off and then 3 days before start studying, or even a week before start studying. It just doesn't work that way. It's not going to work. And so one of the best things, and part of why we also do the capstone course, is to sort of help students learn how to study for this, right? These are the different competencies that we have to learn and make sure that we've mastered. And I will have them do like practice tests in the compend or prepare to succeed. We have, I mean, several resources. Obviously, the conference has their study guides that are great too. I basically have them test over and over and over and over again. And what's interesting to me is, and then I track all of their scores on a spreadsheet to kind of see, okay, here's where you're averaging in each competency. And then we do like practice, you know, national boards as well, just to kind of see where the students are at. But like, we kind of walk with them through this studying process, because it's not inherent in us that like how to study for something this big. Most of us have never done something like this before. And so kind of teaching them, okay, this week we're focusing on this. And then if there's questions you got wrong, or there's areas that you're struggling with, take a mini quiz in those areas, or take other practice tests. I always say, even if you spent 10 minutes a day, like every day should just be a little tiny bit. If it's a one little practice test here or there, but 10 minutes a day, I mean, that's over an hour that accumulates over a week. You studied for over an hour for your NBE without even really thinking about it, because you just did a few little quick hit, like, you know, quizzes. So a little bit every day, focusing on consistency, not intensity.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like you're a proponent of taking a lot of practice tests. Is that because they're going to see those exact same questions on the NBE?
Probably not.
No,
probably not.
But it's going to
help them like get used to some of the questions, some of the wording. It's going to help them kind of build that skill of what is this question asking? And I think it helps take the nerves away a little bit, because by the time you actually get to your NBE, you're like, I have tested so much. I'm like Rocky in the ring, and I'm ready to just go to town now. Right. Like, they're not scared anymore because we've beat it out of them with all the testing that we've been doing. But it's kind of like you have a fear, just face your fear a little by little and you'll overcome it, you know? So yeah, I've been teaching Capstone for, I think, 2.5 years now. And I firmly believe in this approach. I've seen success with our students from this extra testing and focusing on each competency at a time and doing this kind of consistent work every day versus the intensity of trying to study for NBEs.
Yeah, absolutely. Something else I want to touch on that you mentioned. Now, if someone has been out of school for a while, maybe they've taken the national board, maybe they haven't, and now they plan to. Because they have been out of school for a while, can they still be successful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I would say for someone in that situation, reach out to your local mortuary school and ask for resources, because we're more than happy to help. We want you to join the field. We want to get more good funeral directors in this field, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, reach out for help. Don't try to do it alone. Don't try to say, you know, oh, I don't need anybody's help. You might. And we have a lot of resources and we're here and happy to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel certain that whatever school you went to, there's someone there that'll say the exact same thing. They are happy to help. Absolutely. Yep. And you were talking about cramming, especially if you've been out of school for a while, or if you're taking national board exam for second, third, fourth, fifth time. This is going to be your last time, by the way. You can't wait until the week before and cram, or a couple days before, or even the month before. Doing a little bit at a time can be more effective than trying to do a whole lot at one time. Would you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. And the other thing too, is I know this might sound really putzy and students might listen to this and roll their eyes, but
it's okay.
I'm okay with that, because I firmly believe this. And again, Dr. LeBrant helped me, like, you know, see the value of this. But when you're studying, have a notebook and write down every question that you got wrong and what the correct answer is, and have your wrong answer notebook with the right answers in it. Because that means every single time that you got something wrong, you're committing that correct answer to your memory. And by writing it down, it's going to help your brain retain that information much, much better than just looking at it on a screen or just thinking, okay, yeah, I got it. But doing some of those activities that physically tie that to your memory is going to be really, really important too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's studies behind that showing that writing it is more effective than even typing it in the notes section on your phone or on your computer or whatever. There is that link there for writing it. That's a great idea. So what'd you call it? The wrong answer notebook?
Yeah.
I love that. So everybody start, go get a spiral notebook today and start your wrong answer notebook. I love it.
And if you want to make it fun, you know, I love office supplies. Get like a fun, sparkly, wrong answer notebook and get a glitter pen or something. I don't know. Make it fun.
I'm going to make a post on our Facebook page about wrong answer notebook and ask everybody to put a picture of their wrong answer notebook on there.
Yes. So
everybody go to Facebook and submit submit a picture of your wrong answer notebook. That's awesome.
Well, and here's the other kicker too. Is I tell the students, you guys can learn so much from each other. If you all take your wrong answer notebooks together and talk about it, you're like, now you're learning not just your wrong answers, you're learning everybody else's wrong answers too. You could be learning 3, 4, 5 times faster, you know, by even just reviewing some of theirs before you take the next, you know, practice exam.
One thing I do want to caution on that is if you are taking any kind of practice exam where you're seeing the same questions over and over, don't rely on memorizing the question and answer. Oh. You've got to actually learn from that wrong answer. And that's a big difference from memorizing it. Because if you just start memorizing answers and you're making 100 on all your practice tests because you've seen all the questions, you know, 10 times, that's not going to do you any good when you get to the MBE because it is going to be different questions.
That's a great point of caution. And you're absolutely right. It's, you know, and also I think to think about as, you know, you're working to become a professional, right? And you're getting a professional license. It doesn't work to just memorize things, right?
No. Like
we need to conceptually understand how things work because our license is on the line, right? We could get subpoenaed to court. I mean, certainly you're familiar with those situations, like
yes.
With your background, but I just mean like, this isn't about, and I tell the students this isn't about your teacher telling you what to do. This is about you doing what is the right thing because you are advocating for your professional license and you advocating for yourself as a professional.
That's right. You have an ethical and legal obligation to understand what we're doing and why we do it.
Yep.
For
exactly.
Sure. For sure. And in that wrong answer notebook, it's also important to look at what those wrong answers, the answer that you chose, because that may be the wrong answer, but it's probably the correct answer to something. So that's the way questions work. The distractors are usually legitimate answers, just not to that question. So you can learn a lot from the wrong answers as well. So it's yes. always important to look at those.
That's a great point. You know, looking at some, you could have a question where it's like, well, both of these could be answers. And that's totally true. They could be, but what one is the best answer? And mm-hmm. that can sometimes throw students for a loop too.
Yeah. And sometimes you'll have an answer thrown in there that it just completely makes no sense. And that's going to happen. But for the most part, the questions will have distractors that are legitimate answers, maybe just not for that question. Or there may be one word in that question that makes that answer wrong, that distractor wrong.
Yep. So. Yeah. They're very carefully written. I mean, I'm sure you've helped. I've helped write test questions before. There's a huge process that goes into that, you know.
It sure is. And they are honestly not written to confuse you. That there is no one that is trying to confuse you with a question. They are simply meant to assess your learning.
Yes.
And that's the intention of them. As an instructor, I can tell you, I didn't sit around writing questions trying to confuse or throw people off. That was never, it may seem that way, but that's never our intent.
Right. I know. I often have told my students, I am here because I want you to succeed. I'm not here to trick you. I'm not here to, you know, try to play games. I'm trying to help you retain this information so that you can be the best funeral director you can be.
Absolutely. And along that same vein, we want you to be prepared when you go take the MBE. So if we, you know, give you a test that you're going to automatically make an A on but it's not testing the knowledge that you need for that section, it's not going to help you in the end. So,
yes. You know, and that's actually, so something that made me just popped in my mind as we were talking, Cody, is, you know, I've also had students in the past where, like, I don't grade them on how well they do on their practice tests. I just, you know, okay, you got a 40, you got a 50. This is where we're starting. That's okay. People have started practicing and getting 50% on their practice tests, and they still go on to pass the national board,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a process. But I've also had students on the other hand where they're scoring like 97 and, you know, 92 and 98% on their practice exams, which I was like, wow, this is amazing, you know, great job. And then they go and they fail the national board. And so that's also a word of caution, is when you're doing your practice test, be honest with yourself. Are you Absolutely. Looking up the answers and trying to make it look like you're scoring better because you don't want to have a bad score? Because the best thing you can do is just, in raw honesty, get the score where you are, so you have an inventory of a benchmark of where you're at, so you know where to go next.
Yeah, I totally agree, because in the end, you're only hurting yourself.
Yes.
And that's very true. Well, what are some things that you see students doing to prepare that are not effective, that you think are not effective, like you were just talking about?
Well, I think the biggest thing I see that's not effective, like when I've had students come back, like even like they went to school before I even started teaching and they still haven't passed the boards. And so we'll talk. And I find they're doing practice tests, but they're just doing the test to see what their score is. You know, they're not having the wrong answer notebook. They're not looking back to see, okay, what section am I struggling in? And then doing mini practice exams in that section. You know, they could be studying a lot, and it breaks my heart, because it's like, you're putting the effort in, just not the right type of effort to get you the results that you want. So like, it's good that you're taking practice tests, but those practice tests should be the ones that just sort of help you benchmark where you're at right now. We really need to be actually doing some studying in between and studying those wrong answers and understanding, you know, what we don't understand, so we can keep going forward and keep learning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you talked about focusing on those areas that you need improvement. So what I think is important is to have a plan on how you're going to prepare. Like I've said before, don't go sit down at your table with a stack of books and say, well, what am I going to read today? You know what area to focus in, have a plan.
Yep. And I think a good way to start that is by taking a practice exam and just seeing, okay, what are the areas that, because we all are going to be naturally good in certain areas and probably worse in others, right? So, and sometimes we know what those are and sometimes we don't. And sometimes, you know, we're surprised by them sometimes. But I think that is a really important first step, is just getting in there and understanding, realistically, being honest with yourself, these are the areas I'm struggling with.
Naturally, we're going to be probably do best in the area that we're most interested in.
Yes.
And probably going to do worse in the area that we're least interested in. And that's going to be the area that we find least interesting to study as well. So
yes,
got to focus 100%. On that.
And those are the ones we really don't want to study, because they're not fun for us, right?
Yes.
But those are the areas we really need to. Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, what of all the classes you've taught, which class has been your favorite?
I love, love, love my organization management class. I love teaching students about entrepreneurship. I firmly believe, maybe this is just me, but I firmly believe if we could get more, you know, business acumen, education on how to operate a business effectively, get more of that in our curriculum, we could have less consolidations happening and more small funeral homes succeeding. Maybe that's a pipe dream, but that's what I think. That's why I love it so much. It's a fun topic to teach. I love engaging the students in it. It's everything that, I don't know. My students will tell you that's the one class that they know I'm most passionate about.
Now, you said you have an MBA. You're also passionate about entrepreneurship.
Yes.
It sounds like. You want to talk about something you're working on now?
Yeah, I do. I'm in the process actually of launching a business called Salty Wellness and Cafe, where my business partner and I are launching a salt room. So it's halo therapy and yoga, and we have a cafe, and we'll have hot cold therapy. So we'll have like a sauna and cold plunge and do some functional nutrition counseling. A lot of this is my business partner's expertise, and I'm helping on more of the business side of things. And part of why I really wanted to do this was because I teach entrepreneurship. I love it, but I wanted like the hands-on experience of what this actually was like, because, you know, I bring in speakers, and I still continue to will do that, to talk about how they started their funeral homes or their businesses so that the students can get, you know, experience based on our field. But I'm really excited as I've been working this summer and getting more hands-on experience. I'm jazzed to start this fall teaching organization management, because all these concepts are going to be so fresh in my mind.
Yes, it's exciting. I can't wait to hear how that goes. I never heard of the concept, so I may have to go to Minnesota to try out the salt room.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Right. And I've never been to Minnesota, so maybe I'll make that trip.
You haven't?
I have not, no.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so one of the reasons we wanted to start this business too is because so many moms, especially dads too, like we create these lives that are so stressful that we want to like run away from. So we go to a spa, or we go to yoga class, or we go sit in a sauna for a while to just get away from life. And our business is very family friendly. We want you to bring your kids to the salt room. We have toys for them to play with in the salt room. We have family yoga. We have, you know, all of the things that we offer. We have kids items on our menu. We're going to hopefully have some like board games in the lounge area. You know, we want it to be a community where you bring your family so that we can teach our kids what self-care looks like and taking care of ourselves and our bodies looks like, so that they're not growing up and creating a world that they want to run away from.
That's right. Oh, I'm glad you said that. I want to go back to something you said earlier about how you got burnt out in funeral service. Can you talk about that a little bit and maybe give some advice on for those that are just starting in the business?
Absolutely. So for me, you know, when I graduated, I was 20 when I graduated mortuary school. And I was fairly young and naive, but very excited about the profession. I think any student can maybe relate to this, where when that call comes in, you're like, okay, like I'm gonna go, I'm gonna do my best. And, you know, you're kind of excited about it. And I put everything into my career, like everything. And then I just got burnt out really fast. And of course, like emotional intelligence is something we're learning more about now. But back then, I didn't really understand what emotional intelligence was. And it wasn't a buzzword that we talked about even as a society. But, you know, what it means is understanding yourself to know when you're dysregulated, or when, you know, we operate in the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system, right? And when we're in the sympathetic nervous system mode, we're stressed. Right. And when we get into the parasympathetic, that's when we're calm. And so many of us operate in the sympathetic constantly because it's the only way we've ever known how to live. And so learning how to regulate yourself, get yourself down into your parasympathetic, and knowing how to, you know, calm your vagus nerve, all of these things, so that you're not putting so much into it and not getting that rest that your body and your brain need to continue to be successful. So I feel like I went and I had like my foot on the gas pedal the whole time.
I'm glad you did. Yeah. And if you're not getting that rest and you're not serving families as well as you could be either.
No, that's a great point. In fact, one of my stories, as I remember, and it was a horrible feeling, but I remember about, I think it was 6 years in, it was right probably when I realized I needed to move on. But I had a family that came in and I was so burnt out. I was so, like, I was apathetic. It was just kind of like, and that's not me. I care. I know I love people. I care about people. And I always put my all into it. And I remember a family coming in and, I mean, inside just kind of rolling my eyes a little bit, like, come on, come on, come on. Got places to be and things to do, you know, and pick out the casket, let's go, you know, and kind of yeah. having these feelings. And I, you know, it scared me to my core falling asleep that night thinking, you know, and I don't think that I treated the family any, sure. I'm just saying this was the narrative going on in my head. And it scared me because it's like a grieving family deserves a mentally resilient funeral director, every grieving family. And if you're not able, if you're not taking that rest that you need, I don't care how, it's not a badge of honor to work how many hours in a row or to, you know, run yourself ragged. It's not. In fact, I think it shows lack of emotional intelligence. If you're choosing to just push and think you're a rock star. No, because rock stars take naps and they rest yeah. and they calm down so that they're ready and present for the next family that walks through the door.
But you and I started about the same time, roughly the same time. And it seems like it was worn as a badge of honor when you worked all night, all day for a week straight, you know?
100%. It was, I don't want to say it was indoctrinated in us, but for me, it was kind of like, I remember even things where I went on a suicide call and it was like, oh, you hired a good intern because she didn't balk at all at the sight of what we just saw, you know? And it's like,
yeah.
That's such a different narrative than where we're at today, where today I would like to think it'd be more of, are you okay? Like, let's talk about that. Let's debrief. That was a lot. But back then it was felt like a badge of honor, and it felt like it was, you were the hardest working person in the room because you were yes. the one that just finished working for, you know, 36 hours straight. And, you know, I don't know, it's, I have noticed that change, but I haven't worked in the funeral home setting recently to know if that is changing all over or if that's just something I'm witnessing sure. changing.
And I'm sure I feel certain there's still funeral homes around the country that it is still that way, and it will be for a while. But by us teaching students, by us learning that there is a better way, we can effectively make that change
yes.
across the industry.
And the other thing too, is to think, you know, a nap doesn't need to be a 3-hour nap. A nap can yeah. be a 20-minute nap if you know how to, you know, regulate your system. If you learn the tools how to regulate your system, 20 minutes is all you need, right? Or if you do even a, you know, 5-minute breathing exercise while the funeral is going on, you could be mm-hmm. a totally different person by the time you're leading that family out of the church. You know,
yes. like
there are techniques now that you can learn and do anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Just don't sit on the back row and fall asleep, let your mouth open and start snoring.
Yeah, don't do that.
Probably not a good idea. Don't count on that final prayer to wake you up. It doesn't right. always work. Hey, if we can you tell listeners a little bit about Sturdy and the legislation and everything that you've done in that area?
Yeah, I'd love to. So when we first started advocating, we were really lucky to find some consumer groups that supported us and helped us because we didn't know what to do. You know, we just sort of had our story. But there's, you know, we worked really closely with Consumer Reports. They're based out of Yonkers, New York. That's where their testing lab is. We joined it's called the ASTM International, but it's an international organization that sets safety standards for products, like thousands of products out there. And CSUs, clothing storage units, were one of them. So we joined that subcommittee that actually sets the safety standards for dressers. So we had kind of a group of parents at each of those meetings. So we're sitting there with, you know, Ashley Furniture and, you know, IKEA and, you know, all of the kind of big name furniture people. We have helped make these safety standards with them. The problem is that what was happening was they didn't have data to show how these tip overs were actually happening. And we were arguing our children are our data. And I understand that you don't have like hard written data, but like anecdotally, we do. We have data that shows it. But if you want to know the make and model of everyone that fell over on a child, you know, half these parents took an axe to that thing or burnt it in a yeah. fire pit the night it happened or whatever, right? Like but we can't ignore the fact that this is happening even if we don't have the data for it. So what we ended up doing as a parent group was we sort of became the liaison between when we would hear tip-overs happening, even if it was a near miss, meaning the dresser fell over, but nobody was injured, thank God. Or maybe someone was injured, but didn't die, thank God. You know, our argument was always, that could have been my child too, right? Like, we don't know who's going to live and who's going to die, but the reality is the dresser still fell over. And so, so we started kind of hearing, like getting in contact basically through social media with families who would post things like this, like, oh, this just happened. And most people don't even know this was a thing. So they're just sharing a crazy story that happened, not realizing that their child escaped being a statistic, thank God. But we would ask them, can you take a picture of the sticker on the dresser? And then we would bring that information to the furniture manufacturers to say, whose dresser was this? You know, like, yeah, this happened. And it wasn't to point fingers, but it was to say, like, listen, we can all work together and we can solve this. Like, we're all smart people, but you can't ignore that this is happening. And you have to understand that we might just not have data for every single thing. So long story short, we tried changing safety standards through ASTM International, but we're only, you know, a handful of parents against all these manufacturers. So of course, most of the things we voted for, they didn't vote for.
Sure.
But what we also ended up doing was we went to the Consumer Product Safety Commission and we went before them in a public hearing. And we actually set up individual meetings with all of them as well, which is outlined. We have a Netflix documentary called Broken. So if anyone wants to watch Broken, it's episode 3, Deadly Dressers. But it shows when we parents went to the CPSC and met with the different commissioners at the time to tell them about what was happening and that we needed their help. And so, but they could only do so much too. And so then we also, and they were kind of telling us, go to the Hill, go to the Hill. And at the time I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Go to the Hill. I don't even know what you're talking about. Okay. Go to Capitol Hill, right? Go and talk to your legislators, go try to figure this out. So we kind of had these three avenues we were working with: the furniture manufacturers, with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and then with legislators. And at the end of the day, we were able to sort of leverage one against the other, right? Because we're trying to tell furniture manufacturers, listen, if they pass this legislation, it might be a lot more strict than you want it to be.
Yeah.
Don't you want to work with us and try to just make it stronger, but not so strong that it's going to kill your business? And, you know, and then working. So basically, we kind of, at the end of the day, had IKEA come to us, which that was the manufacturer of the dresser that killed my son. So we started working together and it was a really beautiful thing. They said, we want to be part of the solution. And so we all started working together. We met every Wednesday for an hour and strategized on how we were going to get Sturdy drafted again, how we were going to get this bill passed. And so we met, I think it was almost 2 years working on it. Sturdy had been introduced 3 times into legislation. It died the first 2 times, and then the 3rd time it passed.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And you actually visited IKEA too, didn't you?
I did. I went to Sweden a couple of years ago, and I got to see, before they launched their new dresser designs, I got to see what their new dresser designs were looking like and some of the innovation that they were working on. And it was a really powerful experience. And believe me, there was a time in my life where I'm like, I'm never going to Sweden to IKEA. They killed my child. You know, that was like the grief in me, right? But to look, take a step back and say, there's not a person that killed my child, right? This was a horrible accident. And this is a company that wants to be part of the solution. And this is what I wanted at the end of the day, right? This is why I spoke up, because I got to look in the mirror every day and be proud of who I am. And if I don't say something and I hear this happens to another child, I don't know if I can say that's true. So, you know, this is why we went to them, so they would change, and they're doing it. And so for that, like, I wanted to commend them for that. But it was a really, really powerful trip.
That's awesome. And thank you for all the work you've done on that. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I never, until I met you, I never knew it was such a danger. Never thought about it, really.
Yeah. Most people don't. It's funny. I mean, part of it too, is because we become so globalized, like, they don't make them like they used to, right? We always hear that. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Like, dressers are made, lighter, not as sturdy as they used to be and all of that. There are still, we have still heard stories of, I mean, I remember presenting the first time I went to Babies R Us to present about my son's story. And I kind of piggybacked after the woman spoke about CPR or taught CPR. So then I spoke about my son's story and tip over prevention. And I remember there was a lady in the crowd that was just in awe. And she goes, my brother died from a dresser that fell on him in the 1950s. And we were just told not to talk about it. And it was like, oh. And I just remember thinking, like, even, I mean, we've seen even old heavy dressers have fallen over.
Yeah.
So it's not just the newer dressers. Everything should be anchored to the wall. Even after sturdy passed, everything should be anchored to the wall. It's kind of like wearing a seatbelt when you're in the car, right? Accidents can still happen. So it's good to still anchor it to the wall.
Yeah, that's awesome. That kind of leads us into, and I picked this one for you specifically, our concept of the day that we're going to discuss. It's about proper maintenance ensures safety, accessibility, and dignified conditions for services and visitors. It's important to keep our funeral facility well-maintained and safe for everyone as well, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And to make sure that we're maintaining, abiding by all the law, like ADA laws and things like that too. Yes.
Now, we don't have to worry about this much in Texas, but one part of this is talking about like clear walkways. I'm sure that's something that y'all have to contend with in Minnesota.
We do.
With the snow and the ice. But all of that is important because when visitors to our facilities, it's important that they have a safe environment and that not only for visitors, but also for our staff in the prep room, making sure that even as far as good tires on the vehicles that are being driven, because the last thing we want is for anyone to get hurt, staff, visitors, families,
right?
Anyone.
I think that's so true. Like, yes, of course, for families and visitors coming in to a funeral, obviously we take so many outside people that come in and are new to our facility, but exactly what you said too, for employees. I mean, I think safety is so important for your employees. They're your greatest asset. That's going to be one of your biggest costs. And that's going to also be one of your biggest assets. So if you take good care of them, they'll take good care of you. But it starts with making sure that they're working in a safe environment and that you actually, as their employer, care about their safety and have concern for them. And I actually think the younger generation, like the Gen Zers, that's more important to them than older people. And I remember back in the day when I first started, maybe you do too, but you always heard stories of, the guy who embalmed with no gloves or the person who didn't wear PPEs or all those things. And even back in the early 2000s, it was kind of like, oh, there's so many PPEs we have to wear and whatever. And it's like, nope, it's not like that. That narrative, I think, has changed a lot because we've realized how important safety is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there was probably a time that I didn't wear all the PPE that I should have. And there's been things that have happened because of that.
Yes, so, same.
Yeah, very much so. Well, as we begin to wrap up here, if you could provide one tip for students or for graduates that are taking the MBE, just a few sentences, what would your biggest final tip be?
Consistency over intensity, and buy a really fun wrong answer notebook and use it.
And post a picture because we all want to see it.
Yeah, post a picture.
Yes, that's important. I think we'll name this episode Wrong Answer Notebook. I like that.
I love that. Let's do it.
Yes, yes. And if people want to learn more about Sturdy or some of the work you do there, is there anywhere they can learn more about that?
They can visit parentsagainsttipovers.org.
Okay, and I'll post that in the show notes.
Great. That's our group, our 501c3's website. So we used to be posting lots of updates on what was happening with Sturdy and everything, but now that Sturdy's passed, it's more of a resource for parents, as far as, tip over education, and with the current administration and what's happening with the breakdown of the CPSC right now and potentially moving it over to HHS. There's also some questions about how many resources the government is going to be able to provide moving forward. And so I use our website because whatever happens with the government, we will keep our resources there.
Yeah, for sure. I'll post that website in the show notes for anyone that's interested. Hey, Janet, thank you so much for joining us and for being on the podcast and for all the wisdom that you brought and everything that you do for everyone. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Very good. Well, everyone, thank you for joining us for another episode. We've got another amazing guest next week. And until then, thanks for coming to the Prep Room. Y'all have a good day. Thanks for stopping by the Prep Room. Be sure to subscribe, rate the show, and share with your colleagues in funeral service. The views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of MBE Wizard, the Prep Room, show host, or producers. The content of this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, medical, or exam-specific advice. MBE Wizard and the Prep Room are not affiliated with or endorsed by the International Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards, the National Board Exam, or the American Board of Funeral Service Education. We do not share, solicit, or discuss actual exam content. All strategies and insights are designed to support ethical, independent preparation. For official guidance, always consult your academic program and/or state licensing board. Special thanks to Valenti for all the music used in this episode and every episode. Thanks, brother. If you're a funeral service professional, educator, or student with a story, insight, or strategy to share, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out to us at info@mbewizard.com. For more tips, tools, and test prep, follow MBE Wizard on social and visit mbewizard.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, stay focused, stay strategic, stay MBE ready. Stuff your face and feed your purse. Your children just keep getting worse. Why aren't you learning? Oh, my love.
Healing tired of being lame. Hear what I'm saying. Give thanks for every single day you wake. Know that you're living this side of the grave. Try to make a friend, try to smile and wave. And when you got the blues, just say, yeah.